The assessment is absolutely clear and now is unimpeachable. Mining in critical salmon habitat will severely impact salmon at Bristol Bay.
The EPA releases its final watershed assessment for Bristol Bay. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, January 15th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, more details on the state's new gas line agreement.
There's a lot of information in here, and there's a lot that Alaskans still want to know.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
A message to parents from the Alaska Department of Education. Learning to read is the basis for all future learning. Parents can help their children get off to a good start as readers. Read with your young children every day. Do lots of talking with your kids. Make up stories together. Play games with words like rhyming games. Encourage your kids to write and draw stories and ask your school how you can help your children become good readers. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
The EPA has released the final version of the document they will use to make future regulatory decisions about whether or not to allow large-scale mining to go forward in the Bristol Bay region. KDLG's Mike Mason has the story.
The EPA has been working on the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment for the last 3 years, and Region 10 Administrator Dennis McLaren says the document is finished and won't be updated if and when the Pebble Limited Partnership or other entities file for permits to conduct mining. He says the mining scenarios used for the Pebble Mine are based on documents made public by the Pebble Limited Partnership.
We don't believe that we'll need to update the assessment. The assessment is a final document. It will stand as the basis for the next steps that we make. But should a mine plan and permit application be filed by the owners of the Pebble deposit, then there will be regulatory processes associated with that as well, including permitting actions by the state, the Corps of Engineers, other agencies, and a National Environmental Policy Act assessment as well.
The final version of the watershed assessment includes an estimate that the Pebble Mine would destroy between 24 to 94 miles of salmon-supporting streams and between 1.3 thousand to 5.3 thousand acres of wetlands, ponds, and lakes, depending on the actual size of the mine. The representative of the scientists that actually developed the watershed assessment is EPA senior scientist Jeff Fritzen with the agency's Office of Research and Development. He notes that polluted water from the mine site could enter streams through uncollected leachate or runoff.
However, our calculations and estimates show that greater than a 99% capture efficiency would be required to prevent exceedance of existing water quality criteria. It is unlikely that such a high capture efficiency could be routinely achieved over the lifetime of a mine. Uncollected leachates from waste rock piles and tailing storage facilities would elevate in-stream copper levels and cause direct effects on salmon.
The EPA claims that under routine operations, the adverse direct and indirect effects on fish would be seen in 13 to 51 miles of streams, once again depending on the size of the mine. The process of putting together the Bristol Bay Watershed Assessment got started after several tribal entities in Bristol Bay asked the EPA to step in and use its authority under the Clean Water Act to deny the issuance of dredge and fill permits that would be needed to develop a mine. The EPA didn't go that far, but instead started the assessment process to inform any future decision-making about allowing the Pebble Mine or other large mines to be developed. Region 10 Administrator Dennis McLaren says the regulatory and policy decisions are next.
And a response to the tribes is what we're most concerned about developing next.
In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
There was mixed reaction to the EPA's release of its Bristol Bay watershed study. KDLG's Dave Benninger has more.
For the tribes, fishermen, and environmental groups who've lobbied the EPA to involve itself in the Pebble Mine debate, Wednesday's release came as an affirmation of long-held beliefs.
The assessment is absolutely clear and now is unimpeachable. Mining in critical salmon habitat will severely impact salmon at Bristol Bay,
said Bob Waldrip, the executive director for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, which represents all of the drift net fishermen in the bay. The groups who have aligned themselves against the Pebble Mine have not always been allies and certainly have not always seen eye to eye with the federal government. But the Bristol Bay tribes, who requested the EPA to issue a 404C veto of the mine back in 2010, say they've appreciated the agency's partnership so far.
We are so happy with the job the federal agency, the EPA, has done in Bristol Bay of making sure that tribal governments and its membership have been involved.
That's Alana Hurley of the United Tribes of Bristol Bay, which represents 12 watershed tribes. Hurley says the tribes are in constant contact with the Obama administration, making clear that the original request was to put a veto on the Pebble Mine.
This is his opportunity to leave quite a legacy. The people of Bristol Bay, the tribes of Bristol Bay, are tired of this cloud of pebble hanging over us, suffocating our region. The time to act is now.
The $2.4 million assessment is now more than 1,300 pages in length, and it's safe to say most commenting Wednesday hadn't had time to read it past the 40-page executive summary. Still, environmental groups from the Natural Resources Defense Council to the World Wildlife Fund are praising the EPA's work as scientifically sound. Tim Bristol is the Alaska Program Manager for Trout Unlimited, which has helped lead the fight against pebble.
Oh, I think they've done a tremendous job. Two rounds of analysis, two rounds of peer review, incorporating all the information they possibly could from every source, including Northern Dynasty and the Pebble Limited Partnership.
Others disagree, including Pebble Limited Partnership CEO John Shively, who said that after a very cursory review of the assessment Wednesday, he wasn't convinced anything had improved from the draft version.
We don't think it's science-based. For instance, you know, we had a lot of science. They used none of it.
Shively was referencing the $150 million worth of environmental studies done by Pebble over the last decade, which has resulted in some 30,000 pages of data.
We have brought in some of the top experts in the world to help us, some of the top fisheries experts, some of the top mining engineering experts. All of that's going into our work, and we're still not done with it after, you know, basically over a decade. EPA, you know, certainly didn't take anywhere near that time and spent nowhere near that money. They just, you know, they basically rushed through this, and I think they had a predetermined outcome.
Shively says the hypothetical mining scenarios used by the EPA are not based on the 21st century technology being implemented in a mine plan for Pebble. He also says the EPA process itself has been flawed, rushed, and often done in secret. At the heart of the final watershed assessment is the conclusion that a mine like Pebble would present significant risks to Bristol Bay salmon and the people who depend on them. Shively says that analysis is purposely overstated.
But I will tell you this, if they're correct, this mine will never be permitted. I mean, we have to show that we can protect that fishery. If our mine plan comes along and the permitting agencies think we cannot protect the fisheries and not coexist with the fisheries, we will not get the many permits that we need.
Others weighed in Wednesday as well. Senator Mark Begich ambiguously stated that he would rely on science before taking a position, while both Senator Lisa Murkowski and Governor Sean Parnell were highly critical of the EPA's assessment, suggesting it was setting up the agency to issue a premature veto of the mine. In Dillingham, I'm Dave Benninger.
U.S. Senator Mark Begich today introduced a bill to allow a road from King Cove to Cold Bay just weeks after Interior Secretary Sally Jewell rejected the idea because it would run through a wildlife refuge. Begich says he picked one of the options scrutinized in a recent environmental assessment.
We picked the one that we believe was the most reasonable and creates access, mitigates significant concerns that people had.
Alaska's delegation to Congress has been sponsoring similar legislation for decades, saying King Cove residents need a road for emergency evacuations. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Anchorage residents testify on the effects of the drug spice on the community.
It's a very, very dangerous drug, mainly because of how inconsistent it can be with the effects that it has on people.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2014 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through PickClickGive or contributing to a college savings plan. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Last week, Governor Sean Parnell announced he was cutting a deal to make the state a partner in a large diameter gas line. Now, the terms of the agreement with the North Slope producers and TransCanada have been released. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reports.
The document that was signed yesterday is the contract version of a promise ring. It's like getting engaged to be engaged. Except with this, there's maybe a pipeline at the end of it instead of a wedding. Basically, the state of Alaska, the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, Exxon, BP, Conoco, and TransCanada have all agreed to work together on a natural gas megaproject so long as 20-odd pages of conditions are met. It would give Alaska up to a 25% stake, says Natural Resources Commissioner Joe Balash.
You arrive at that number by taking our royalty interest, which between Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson is somewhere north of 13%. You add to that a production tax number. That number, we hope, is going to fall somewhere between 7 and 13%.
The big three would split the rest of the pie amongst themselves. Meanwhile, TransCanada would get a chunk of the state share. That's because TransCanada would fund the development work on a pipeline, according to Tuesday's agreement. Balash says the agreement also lays out terms for TransCanada to potentially exit the project at the end of the initial contract.
At the end of that 25 years, we can buy them out at their net book value.
TransCanada originally became a partner under the Alaska Gasline Inducement Act, or AGIA, which passed during the Palin administration. That law envisioned a pipeline that would stretch from the North Slope through Canada and down to the lower 48. But that hit roadblocks when a boom in shale oil made the project uneconomic. The Memorandum of Understanding between TransCanada and Alaska also addresses the reimbursements to the company that the state committed to paying. AGIA contained a provision where the state would cover up to $500 million in TransCanada expenditures to develop a pipeline, and about $300 million of those funds have already been spent. Balash says the state would be released from the rest of that obligation if the legislature approves the terms of yesterday's agreement. To do that, state lawmakers need to pass legislation this session that would allow the executive branch to negotiate confidentially with the other parties while working out contracts related to the project. The legislature will also have to take on the issue of gas taxes to meet the terms of the agreement. Right now, natural gas is taxed the same way that oil is, despite the differences in the way they're priced and marketed. Revenue Commissioner Angela Rodell says a simpler gross tax of up to 13% would make more sense if the state is an equity partner. She thinks it will be a less contentious discussion than the bruising battle over oil taxes.
The conversation about the state being an equity partner already leads us to a much more positive discussion about what the possibilities are for the state's take.
Lawmakers from both chambers and both sides of the aisle largely welcome news of the announcement. Members of the House and Senate majorities issued glowing statements about the agreement. The Democratic minority was more subdued, commenting that they view an equity arrangement favorably, but want safeguards for the state in whatever deal is made. Larry Persley is the federal coordinator for an Alaska gas line, and he also says it's a step in the right direction, even if it's not quite yet time to break out the champagne.
There's a lot of information in here, and there's a lot that Alaskans still want to know, right? Alaskans want to know, when are you going to decide to build it, and when am I going to start seeing steel pipe come over the dock? Well, you know, we're not there yet, but this is a piece that's got to be there before you get to that decision.
While that construction would be a ways off, even if everything does go as planned, fieldwork on the project is expected to take place this summer if the legislature takes the actions required by the agreement. In Juneau, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority has selected a business partner for development of a natural gas processing plant on the North Slope. At a meeting yesterday, the ADA board chose a group led by MWH Americas to construct the plant that will liquefy gas for trucking to Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The North Slope Gas Processing Plant is the centerpiece of the state's Interior Energy Project, designed to leverage shipment of lower-cost, cleaner-burning gas to Fairbanks, where high oil prices have driven people to polluting wood and coal-fired heating. The project is supported by an over $332 million financing package approved by the state legislature last spring. The company selected to build the gas plant, MWH, has decades of experience in Alaska, including in the North Slope oil industry. Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority spokesman Karsten Rodvik says their proposal stood out on several fronts.
First of all, they've got a premier LNG team, We believe also that they're the best qualified to bring the plant in on time. And then thirdly, MWH offers a flexible capital structure that allows for future plant expansion should the need arise.
The North Slope Gas Processing Plant is estimated to cost $185 million, $82 million of which will be provided by MWH, with the rest to be covered by low-interest financing through ADA.
They are bringing more private capital to the project. Therefore, that increases the potential for some of the funding provided by the legislature to us, to ADA, to be used to assist in the distribution system build-out.
The project targets getting gas to Fairbanks by the winter of 2015-2016. Only about 1,100 customers currently served by Fairbanks Natural Gas with high-cost product trucked in from Cook Inlet are piped for gas. FNG is in the process of expanding distribution in its city core service area. The North Star Borough's interior gas utility is focused on laying distribution in medium-density areas, including North Pole. A primary goal of the Interior Energy Project is to ensure gas is cheaper than heating oil. ADA's Rodvik says the MWH proposal surpasses a 50% cost reduction target.
With the MWH selection, we are actually looking at a potential savings of 54%.
Rodvik says ADA expects to have a finalized construction and financing package in place by May 31st. MWH's proposal was chosen over competing plans put forward by Fairbanks Natural Gas and Spectrum LNG. In a separate action, the ADA board approved a $20 million loan to Fairbanks Natural Gas to help finance a $35 million gas storage facility. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the 2014 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering dental innovations from implants and Invisalign with 3 offices, 2 in Anchorage and 1 in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
It appears someone tampered with drug samples at the State Crime Laboratory in Anchorage. State troopers put out a short press release today saying new equipment has shown small amounts of foreign materials in the so-called reference samples used to evaluate evidence in drug cases. The release goes on to say this discovery does not compromise the validity of past drug tests or the lab's ability to continue testing drugs. It says a criminal investigation has begun. It refers all questions to the state's head prosecutor, John Skidmore, who would not give many more details about the probe.
I'm going to decline to predict how long it will take, but I can tell you that it is a top priority, both of the Alaska State Troopers Bureau of Investigations, as well as the Department of Law's Office of Special Prosecution. So there are very experienced and dedicated people that are going to be working this very intensively until we have the answers.
The drugs involved were codeine, opium, morphine, amphetamine, oxycodone, and hydrocodone. Skidmore said the size of the reference sample can vary, and can the length of time a laboratory uses it.
How long any given standard has been in the lab, or timing of when any foreign matter made its way into those standards are all subject to the investigation, and so I wouldn't comment any further than that.
It's not clear when the adulteration of the drug samples was detected. Skidmore says the lab began using improved drug analysis equipment when it moved into its new facility last year.
And they, with the new instruments, detected some other readings that previously nobody had seen, and those other readings caused them to examine their known substances further and find some irregularities with them.
The press release says investigators will be notifying attorneys who may have had cases involving the lab's drug testing standards. A Anchorage has a new law that fines people in possession of the designer drug Spice. It's the city's second try at cracking down on the substance after failed attempts with a narrow law that focused on contents that manufacturers can easily change. The Anchorage Assembly acted quickly after hearing public testimony on the damage that Spice has been causing. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
The drugs, marketed as synthetic marijuana with names like Brain Freeze and Train Wreck, are sometimes disguised as potpourri, bath salts, or incense, but are sold by the ounce. Law enforcement experts say Spice makes people act more like they're on PCP or meth than smoking pot. They develop superhuman strength, euphoria, and violent mood swings. Officials have been looking for a way to stop Spice since it showed up in the city a few years back. But manufacturers, mostly in Asia, don't list ingredients on packaging, and lab tests can't keep up with the drug manufacturers changing recipes, so it's been hard to address through the legal system. About half a dozen citizens spoke out in support of the new Spice ordinance. Sean Williams, who owns a business blocks from a downtown smoke shop, said one day he looked out his window and saw a man passed out on the sidewalk.
We called 911, AFD and APD shows up, and after about 15 plus minutes, the guy comes around and immediately reaches in his pocket. You know, the officer is trying to figure out what exactly, you know, was going on. And he pulls out this little glass case, and the guy says, "It's Spice. I just bought it a few minutes ago."
Williams says incidents with Spice are all too common in the downtown business district where he works. David Rittenberg, a program manager at the Brother Francis Shelter, says over the past year, he and his staff have seen a sharp increase in drug-related offenses at the shelter because of homeless people who are using Spice.
It's a very, very dangerous drug, mainly because of how inconsistent it can be with the effects that it has on people. We have witnessed people using this drug exhibit uncontrollable rage, belligerence, rapid and extreme mood swings, uncontrollable outbursts, all the way to seizures, unconsciousness.
Tom McGrath, who worked on the Spinard Action Committee to drive massage parlors out of the neighborhood, says now the Spice shops are bringing in more problems.
Now the same type of people are coming back with these Spice shops, the same type of element that we chased out back in the 80s and the 90s. The Spinard Action Committee will reconstitute if we have to, because we're not going to accept this type of thing in our community.
After hearing testimony on Spice, the Assembly voted in a new law. It allows police officers to issue something akin to a traffic ticket, but for drugs. If Anchorage police officers find a person or business in possession of Spice, they can now write a ticket per vial, tube, or packet. Municipal prosecutor Cynthia Franklin says the new law identifies the substances without actually naming their chemical compounds or makeup.
They identify it by its packaging, by its price point, by its claims, by the fact that it says on the package that it's not a controlled substance, even though it says it's potpourri. That makes no sense. Potpourri is not a controlled substance, so why would a package of potpourri need to say that it's not a controlled substance? What this ordinance says is if it says on its package it's not a controlled substance, then it's an illicit synthetic drug and it's illegal.
The new law is based on one that was passed in Maine and will make laboratory tests less necessary. Anchorage Police Chief Mark Mew is pleased with the new law and says it's a step in the right direction.
It's a low-level crime. It's handled low. It's handled in an inexpensive way for the public. And while it's not the total solution, it is a simple solution that we can put to use right away while the more complex law starts developing.
The tickets are $500 per item. Officers could begin issuing them as early as this week. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Indigenous populations in Alaska and Australia are more vulnerable to flu. That's according to a study published last week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. As KUAC's Emily Schwing reports, scientists are using their finding to help Native populations fight flu in the future.
Hippocrates, the ancient Greek physician, first made note of the flu sometime around the year 400 BC.
So we know that Europeans have been exposed to the virus for centuries.
Katrin Kajeska is an associate professor of microbiology and immunology at the University of Melbourne in Australia. She says populations of European descent have developed more immunity to various strains of influenza over centuries because they haven't been nearly as isolated as Alaska Natives and the indigenous populations in Australia. She says special cells in the human bloodstream, known commonly as T cells, help humans develop immunity.
And because they recognize common features of different influenza strains, if a person has been exposed previously, it can have immunity against different and distinct influenza strains and subtypes.
So if some populations are never exposed to influenza, they may not develop the kinds of T cells required to fight off various strains of the virus. Kajeska says that's exactly what happened in 1918.
When we had an outbreak of the catastrophic Spanish influenza, and it is documented that there was a high morbidity within some isolated Alaskan villages, as well as the indigenous Australian population.
Last year, a new strain of influenza known as H7N9 emerged in China. It originated in birds, but spread to more than 140 individuals, and it had a high rate of mortality. Kajeska says it's not the first time a new strain of influenza has come out, and it's unlikely to be the last. That's why she and colleagues plan to use their findings to further research for vaccinations.
At the moment, what we are trying to research is whether we can develop a novel vaccine, maybe tailored to the indigenous populations, that would boost the universal T-cell immunity in those populations.
But Kajeska says a vaccine specific to Alaska Natives and Australia's indigenous population is still years away. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mike Mason and Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Dan Bross and Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, and Dacia Eaton in Anchorage. APRN's Alexandra Gutierrez reported from Juneau, Liz Ruskin from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation. Alaska's public schools have new standards in English and math, setting high expectations for students. Students who meet these goals will be ready for success after high school, whether in the military, on the job, or in an apprenticeship, technical school, or college. Ask your school for parent guides to the standards or learn more online at education.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development.
Whether visiting Barrow or attending business in Juneau, APRN goes with listeners wherever they roam. Your company's message can span across Alaska on 26 stations. Find out how by calling 907-550-8437.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.